We have something in our brain called sleep brain waves, a very physical, physiological process. And so think about it. When a person's asleep and they do wake up and they roll over and go back to sleep, which is very common. Many people can do that.
Well, right. And that- so in my world, the pH balance internally, switching from slightly alkaline to slightly acidic, will just do that. But that's just a physiology, probably secondary to the primary move, whatever that is.
Well, I'm worried, or I had a bad dream. That's a reasonable option.
Yeah.
Or I had to get up at night to use the bathroom. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, but it never says, okay, but wait, what is in my sleep that's happening? Now, chronic insomnia can mean you have difficulty falling asleep at night. There's certainly a sizable group of people who have that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But a much larger, 10 times larger group are those people who say, well, I can get to sleep, but I cannot stay asleep. And when I wake up, I can't get back to sleep night. And I can't sleep through the night. So the single biggest reason people can't sleep through the night is physical.
Uh-huh.
Even though people think that it's psychological. So people have to first understand that when you wake up and you can't sleep through the night, it's physical, physical, physical. Why would you go from being asleep to being awake? In other words, there are certain things you can think of. You say, well, I could have had a bad dream. Certainly that could have aroused my system.
Hi, everyone. This is Martin Patella for the Life Enthusiast Health Shots podcast. You can find us at life-enthusiast.com. And with me today is Dr. Barry Krako. And that's, well, Barry, you know how to spell. Krako is K-R-A-K-O-W. MD.com. Well, I should probably state it differently, but here we are. There also is a website, and it's called sleeptreatment.com, which probably is the more appropriate venue where we'll find Dr. Krako. But all the same, good day, sir.
Good day to you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's important. Of all the things that people should be talking about, you know, the standard line, I'll sleep when I'm in the grave.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's probably the line that's going to put you there sooner, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You can get added years to your life by sleeping better. And notice that I did not say sleeping longer. I said sleeping better, because that is the key that unlocks the mysteries of sleep. And unfortunately, so many people hear all this stuff from the regular media or other outlets, imagining that you should be counting hours if you're not counting sheep. And the goal should really be to measure the quality of your sleep. That's the very big deal that I talk about incessantly in my book, Life Saving Sleep.
Right on. Yes, quality over quantity, 10 times.
Right, right.
Yeah. So Dr. Krako, how did you actually get here? How did you get to understand all of this?
Well, like most things in life, I would attribute it to divine providence. I got started in the late 1980s working with a group of psychiatrists, very serendipitously, to my way of original thinking, but obviously the creator had something in mind for me. And so we were working on a nightmare treatment program, and I got involved with it. And that led me into the field of sleep medicine. So by the mid-1990s, I was a full-time sleep doctor in clinical sleep medicine. And even before that, I was a full-time sleep medicine researcher. And so I've been doing those two things ever since. So a lot of background, seen lots and lots of research subjects, lots and lots of research patients, and of course, thousands of clinical patients. Right. And I've learned a tremendous amount about how sleep is currently greatly misunderstood, right, by most healthcare professionals, and even most wellness experts.
I imagine. Well, so there's this new help in the works, right? The monitoring devices, the Oura rings or whatever's that help us chart out when we are in stage one, stage two, whatever, right? We should probably define terms. We have the REM sleep and we have the delta waves and alpha waves and whatever else. That should probably be explained. But from a person's perspective, it's like, I can't get to sleep, or I get to sleep, but I wake up and can't get back into sleep. I'm fitful. I wake up so many times a night. I wake up unrested. All of those complaints, right? Like, you've heard them all, right?
Well, the single greatest complaint across the world, across cultures, across domains, anything you can think of, is I can't sleep through the night. It is the single most common sleep problem. And amazingly, people want to look every other place besides their actual sleep physiology as to what is causing that problem. Instead, they want it to be something like, well, I've been stressed out, or I've been anxious, or I'm worried, or I had a bad dream. That's a reasonable option.
Yeah.
Or I had to get up at night to use the bathroom. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, but it never says, okay, but wait, what is in my sleep that's happening? And so that means what people are neglecting through no fault of their own, they haven't been educated this way. We have something in our brain called sleep brain waves, a very physical, physiological process. And so think about it. When a person's asleep and they do wake up and they roll over and go back to sleep, which is very common, many people can do that.
Right.
And that tells you that they were what? Sleepy. They woke up, but they're still sleepy, so they went back to sleep. So how did somebody then not do that? How did they wake up and not be sleepy? That's like going from 0 to 60 in 5 seconds. How do you actually wake up that quickly? And the answer has to be something happened in your physiology that changed.
Right.
And when that physiology changes, that means you have a physical explanation for why you are getting up at night and why you can't sleep through the night. So the single biggest reason people can't sleep through the night is physical, even though people think that it's psychological.
So I keep talking to people about the autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic versus parasympathetic, the fight, flight versus rest, repair, digest. Something in that territory?
Absolutely. What system do you think is activated when you are suddenly waking up and you're wide awake from sleep?
Right. We're switching from the parasympathetic to the sympathetic.
Yeah. It's got to be sympathetic.
Yeah.
What did that? What would cause your blood pressure to go up, your heart rate to go up, your mind to be racing? Why would you go from being asleep to being awake? In other words, there are certain things you can think of. You say, well, I could have had a bad dream. Certainly that could have aroused my system. I could have had an urge to urinate. You know, those are all physical things. I could be too warm. I could be too cold. There could be too much noise. There's all kinds of things that can do it. But what I'm getting at is, notice how all of that is still physical.
Yeah,
even having a nightmare becomes physical, because what is it doing? It's elevating your heart rate. It's elevating your blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So people have to first understand that when you wake up and you can't sleep through the night, it's physical, physical, physical. Let's get physical. as what's her name would say.
We hear your body talk. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that poor woman, she's gone now too. Yeah, cancer got the best of her. So in my world, the pH balance internally, switching from slightly alkaline to slightly acidic, will just do that. But that's just a physiology probably secondary to the primary move, whatever that is.
Well, if you take the what's called the most common example, like why people would actually go to a doctor or go to a drugstore or go anywhere for help, that's what's called, you know, chronic insomnia. Now, chronic insomnia can mean you have difficulty falling asleep at night. There's certainly a sizable group of people who have that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But a much larger, 10 times larger group are those people who say, well, I can get to sleep, but I cannot stay asleep. And when I wake up, I can't get back to sleep. That is the single most common reason that somebody actually seeks help for a sleep problem, mm-hmm. that they wake up and can't get back to sleep. That's called chronic insomnia.
Right.
And the question then becomes, what causes that? And we have pioneered that research after the greatest sleep researcher discovered this problem in 1973. Dr. Christian Guimeneau at Stanford University discovered in a very small group of people that individuals who have sleep breathing issues will wake up at night.
Mm-hmm.
30 years later, a little bit less than that, we began publishing data and research showing that most people with this chronic insomnia problem,
mm-hmm.
they're waking up because of their breathing is being compromised. And what could be more primal than not breathing?
Yeah, okay, well, the fear of dying kicks right in, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty big fear, isn't it?
Yeah, no joke. Well, so interestingly, so in my world, we watch the tides of the pH balance, the internal pH being most alkaline at about 2 p.m. and most acidic at about 2 a.m. So the peak of wakefulness, from my perspective, would be about 2 a.m. That would be the time to wake up. And
do you know if such research, just to be clear, because this is a tricky issue, do you know if the research you're describing was conducted on people who are truly normal sleepers? Because you should know that most people are not normal sleepers, and that sleep doctors are always complaining they can't find normal sleepers to have a good right. comparison group in their controlled research.
Because the normal sleepers are busy sleeping.
Exactly.
The physiology is there. What I would speculate about is, well, again, my world, we talk about metabolic typing and we talk about the people who are alkalized by fats or alkalized by carbs. That's right. The oxidizers versus the autonomics. And if you eat a dinner that's going to shift you toward being more acidic, you're more likely to wake up.
So in that research, have you found that people have changed their diet and all of a sudden the complete absence of awakenings occurs?
Yeah, they get better. They stop complaining. They sleep.
That's great. That's great to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Most times it's not enough fiber, not enough fat, but that's just because it's more common.
Yeah. So again, do you know if those individuals otherwise had other sleep issues? For example, did you know that waking up at night to use the bathroom is actually abnormal? And most people think that it's normal because everybody does it.
Right. And I think it's the older people that do it. I do it to myself when I eat foods that are less compatible with me, like eating to my blood type, for example. I know that chicken's more irritating to my body than lamb, for example. So if I give myself a chicken dinner, I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night because I will have some histamines that are going to wake me up.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I see you're going down the metabolic pathway. So let me give you one to think about.
Yeah.
Are you aware that when a person has a sleep breathing issue, it actually causes the release of the body's own natural diuretic so that the kidneys make more urine during the night And so you end up getting up to use the bathroom to pee. And therefore, if you treat the sleep breathing disorder, you stop getting up at night to pee.
That's awesome. So I'm thinking again. So breathing is how we eliminate carbon dioxide, which is how we eliminate the acidity of the carbonic acid from the body. So,
right. And CO2 builds up in the brain in somebody with sleep apnea.
Which, I'll start calling it the carbonic acid, the acidity, the pH shift, and all of that. So there probably is a great overlap between what I have learned in my thinking all about the pH and food and that sort of thing, and what you have been researching that relates to breathing. So
an example of that, just to see if we're on the same page. I don't know if you have this experience, but many people with sleep apnea have morning headaches. It turns out they also may be susceptible to other headaches. Yeah. But in general, if you treat the sleep apnea, the headaches go away.
Yeah.
Now, do you know what the headache is caused by? The CO2 buildup in the brain causes the vasodilation of the blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
And now you get this throbbing of blood pressure in your brain. And most of those headaches go away within the first hour or two of waking up if you have sleep apnea. But if you treat the sleep apnea, you never even get the headache. And some migraine sufferers actually report headaches go away by treating their sleep apnea.
So maybe they get the headaches because they snore or whatever is the beginning stages of that, right?
Right. As long as there's a buildup of CO2 in your brain, those blood vessels are going to dilate and the blood flow is going to be so increased that it feels like an enormous pressure in your head, which then becomes the headache.
Yeah, I feel that way when I don't sleep enough. Like if I, for reasons unknown, don't give myself enough time to sleep, I'll wake up feeling like a hangover. And I've demonstrated that I can get a hangover without alcohol, just by not sleeping.
Lots of bad things happen when you don't sleep.
Right.
And lots of bad things happens when you do sleep, but it's not good quality sleep.
All right. So let me just allow you to explain it your way, because I'm just learning what you've got, but I should let you have that.
Well, I enjoy the conversation. I appreciate learning as well. The big deal about sleep quality that we're getting at here is that in your brain, you have a brain washing system.
Yeah.
And it's called the glymphatic system.
Only recently discovered, right?
It's a recent discovery, yet all sleep doctors who really were doing research and understood what was going on with sleep knew 20 or 30 years ago there had to be something going on in the brain doing this.
Right.
But it was only 10 or 12 years ago that Dr. Nedergaard, I think, was the one who discovered the glymphatic system.
Right.
And that system washes away toxins best when you're sleeping and best when you're in deep sleep.
Right on.
So if you have any kind of sleep disorder, whatever it happens to be, we can go over different sleep disorders, but in general, you don't go into deep sleep. You can't sustain deep sleep.
Right.
You can't sustain consolidated sleep, continuous sleep. All kinds of things are disrupted. And that means that glymphatic system is not working. And that's one of the reasons you wake up in the morning and feel like crap, because your brain did not get washed.
Right. And of course, if you sustain that, you're going to age faster, lose your function, you lose your ability, and all manner of terrible things happen to you.
Yes, and the big ones that are really obvious are you're going to develop high blood pressure, which then goes on to develop, heart disease. You're going to develop cognitive deficits. You'll have very obvious problems with memory, learning, attention. You'll walk into the doctor's office and they'll say, oh, well, you're just getting older. They won't even ask you whether you have a sleep problem or not. If they ask about a sleep problem, it's not going to be in depth. Some doctors are catching on. Some are referring, patients for sleep testing, but an enormous number of people need sleep tests. Anybody who's interested in their health and has a question about whether their energy level is too low, whether they're aging too fast, whether their cognition isn't that good, whether their endurance and stamina isn't where they want it to be. Those are all big red flags that something is probably going on with the sleep. Right. And there's only one way to find out. Some people can use the wearables that you talked about. You can get some baseline information. Those wearables are going to get better and better through the years and be able to actually diagnose people. Right now, we still need to do some more formal testing, but a lot of that testing can be done at home, and we can find out very quickly if there is a sleep quality problem, most commonly caused by a sleep breathing disruption.
All right. So, well, so we hear the talk about sleep hygiene, as in make the room dark, make the temperature come down, go regular, go to sleep early rather than late. Those would be the baseline things, right? Don't look at blue screens before you go to bed.
Right. So in this book, I talk about, and I've got another book, by the way, coming out next month.
All right.
And it's called An Advanced Guide for Sleep Hygiene. And the name of the book is Fast Asleep. What I'm getting at here is sleep hygiene is a very, very overused term that often leads people down a pathway that doesn't work. But let me give you the caveat. If you have really, really mild sleep problems, and you want to look at sleep hygiene and discover something like, oh, gee, I'm drinking caffeine too late in the day, or I'm taking a nap too late in the day. Sure, that can be a behavioral change that you can make and have benefit. But many people latch onto sleep hygiene because they think, well, I read about this all the time and maybe it's going to work. Well, it often doesn't work. Not only does it not work, but it can actually make things worse because the person doesn't understand there's a lot more going on.
Yeah.
The one that I hate the most is get a regular bedtime. Really? Tell that to an insomniac who's trying to get to sleep and doesn't know how to fall asleep. They can't get a regular bedtime. And so it's maddeningly frustrating to them to hear that instruction because they think, well, if I could get a regular bedtime, you don't think I would get the regular bedtime? So that's one of the reasons I wrote the second book, you know, Fast Asleep, which is coming out in May. But my point is that sleep hygiene can be absolutely invaluable once you've dealt with sleep quality issues. So, for example, when you take the typical sleep apnea patient who also has, and this is my background, insomnia, PTSD, anxiety, depression, all these really complex comorbidities.
Right.
When we help those patients, we first got them using a PAP machine, and not CPAP, by the way. We didn't use CPAP. It's a very outdated system. We had these more advanced PAP machines that are called bilevel. Once they got a very good response on the bilevel, then the conversation of sleep hygiene meant so much more to them. And they could apply sleep hygiene steps with using the bilevel. And that combination was terrific.
Right. So breathing, carbon dioxide, regularity. The conversations I hear is about, well, you're getting older, your tissues are losing their integrity, your tongue is falling too far back in your throat or some such things.
Those are good points because your actual tissues do change. Unfortunately, they change even faster because the friction that builds up from your nose to the bottom of your throat produces inflammation all in that system, the upper airway.
Right.
So now that means your sleep apnea is making your sleep apnea worse.
Yeah, self-feeding, self-amplifying. Yeah.
Right. And one of the simplest things, I always say this to, quote, people that are beginning this journey, because this is so important to hear. You can leave our conversation today and you can do something tonight to sleep better. And people go, okay, I'm in. What do I do? I say, work on your nasal breathing. Because the number of people who have these problems almost always have something going on with their nose that they just did not realize. We have some technical terms called allergic rhinitis, non-allergic rhinitis, a swollen turbinates, deviated septum. But the bottom line is most people normalize their nasal breathing. I have a free video on my website, which is actually the best one is theberrycracomd.com. And the video is called The Nose, N-O-S-E, K-N-O-W-S, The Nose Knows.
Yes, sir.
So it's a free 1 hour video, and it describes all of this that we're mentioning here about how people normalize their nasal breathing and think, okay, well, what's wrong? And so I say, well, go in the shower, make it really steamy, get all the snot out of your nose, then step out of the shower and take a deep breath through your nose, and you should notice that you cannot hear anything except air. And if that's what's going on, then you've got normal nasal breathing. But the caveat is, that's the way your nose is supposed to function 24 hours a day. And if it's not, and if you're blowing your nose, if you're sniffling, if you get a stuffy nose, and all of these things are very common in people with sleep breathing problems because of all that inflammation that's going on. So we have people starting on a very conservative regimen that I go over regularly in this book, because I want people to start and do something and feel like they can be successful right away.
Right.
So that includes nasal saline rinses. It includes certain nasal sprays. It means nasal strips over your nose, maybe nasal dilators. And we've had people within just a couple of days and a couple of weeks come back and say, hey, I'm sleeping better already.
Right on.
And that's so reinforcing and motivating that somebody then wants the full course of, well, what else can I do? This is amazing. I'm already sleeping better.
Yeah. In my world, we approach it from nutrition side of things. And we talk about the post-nasal drip as a result of some foods that you're ingesting that are irritating to your mucosal barriers. Then you'll notice it up here the most. And the two most common culprits have been modern wheat, and dairy, modern dairy.
Right. And we call that gustatory rhinitis.
Right. Stop eating the stuff that makes you snuffly.
Right, right. But in the world of people who, for whatever dietary reasons, they're committed to certain things and maybe they're tapering to something different over time, we do have these incredible nasal sprays on the market that have been surprisingly effective with very little side effects. They're in the steroid category, the antihistamine category, the anticholinergic category. They even have now a xylitol nasal spray over the counter.
Yeah.
These nasal sprays actually treat post-nasal drip, which is actually a function of non-allergic rhinitis in many patients. So again, the bottom line is, changing your diet is a lot harder for people at a certain point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against that. I'm very much, in fact, before I became a doctor, I spent 8 years in the natural food movement. So I was very much into nutrition and have a strong support for advocates of such. But I also recognize that you have to meet the person on the path they're on and try to help them move forward. And so being able to sleep well tonight is what I want in everybody. Yeah. Because when you start sleeping well, you're going, oh, this is a big deal. Like, this is something I really want to invest in.
Yes. Makes sense that way. And yeah, of course. Yeah, xylitol. I have had a xylitol spray. I've added to it some silver to wipe out the little bugs. And works like a charm. Yes, sir.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. What kind of silver do you add?
Oh, it's the ionic colloidal silver.
Colloidal, okay.
Right. Xylitol to make it not hurt, and the water with silver to perhaps undo the infectious critters that may be living up there.
Have you heard about the Immune Mist product?
No, not familiar, no. I've been making my own for years, so I don't know.
It came out with COVID. A bunch of researchers showed that a certain iodine type preparation at low dose had a tremendous impact on
it so makes
serving
sense.
As a barrier in the nasal, you know, passages.
Yeah, well, yeah, Dr. Brownstein came up with, let's do inhalations of iodine with hydrogen peroxide and salt, right? It all makes sense. I mean, iodine is the most supportive of healthy mucosal barriers. So logically.
Right. And these things are so important because any person, you know, nowadays when people come to me and talk about, I have a sleep health coaching service on the same website, BarryCracoMD.com. And when I talk with people, they're already down the pathway of having failed a CPAP machine. So I'm trying to help them get on one of these more advanced devices called Bilevel and coaching them on how to talk to their doctors and get that. But the biggest thing that they're not recognizing is that they could have been better off had they worked on their nose first, not because it cures sleep apnea, but because it means that anytime you're going to use a PAP machine, how could you do it unless your nose is working? And their doctors were not insistent on this. And I see many unfortunate cases where I go, well, of course your PAP isn't working. Your nose isn't working. We've got to get your nose working. Then you can go back and see how the PAP can work for you.
So this would be kind of challenging. So how do I keep my mouth shut through the night? I mean, I could put a tape on. I can't do it with my whiskers on my face. That would be really awful. So what would I do? Put some kind of a rubber strap that will hold my chin up?
Well, when I see individuals who report this particular issue, which, as you probably know, gets worse as we get older because of muscle laxity. And the name for this, we have it, is called jaw drop. So jaw drop and mouth open, all that stuff is a huge barrier to successful treatment of a sleep breathing disorder. You have to be able to treat it. Now, in the world of sleep medicine, we have at least two solutions that often have very useful impact. They're not always perfect, but they sometimes give perfect response on an individual basis. One is what's called the full face mask. It goes over the nose and the mouth, and it actually puts a little bit of leverage here below the lip, and it keeps it closed. But another one is called the chin strap, which people used to use with old tire treads back in the 1940s during World War II, if not earlier, to put around the head to stop people from snoring. So any type of device you see on the market that can work for you. However, the caveat here is, are you doing that because you think that's your total solution? And the answer is it could be, but it's usually not.
Right.
For example, most people who will fix their nose and get really good nasal breathing, and that for some people might mean surgery on shrinking the turbinates or a deviated septum or removing tonsils. But once the nose is working, mouth breathing is far less. However, if you've done all that and you still have mouth breathing, there has to be a consideration for mouth taping, chin straps, full face mask, neck collars. And it is required. You're absolutely correct. A person who says, well, I'm just going to sleep and continue to mouth breathe, they're really never going to gain a high level of sleep quality. So it's an excellent point.
Right. Yes, so that will lead to the interrupted sleeps and unrestful, unsatisfying mornings. Yeah.
Absolutely right. And to other health consequences that people are just amazed that once they get on a sleep breathing treatment. For example, one of the most common findings, somebody may end up lowering their blood pressure medication dosage or even eliminating their blood pressure medication because the treatment of the sleep apnea reversed the high blood pressure.
Right. Yeah.
Another one, of course, is the cognition, where people's memory returns, and they're like, they're angry because people kept telling them, no, this is all in your mind. This is aging. Mm-hmm. We can't help you. And now they go, well, gosh, I wish somebody had told me this 10 years ago, because think of the benefits. Right. I only learned about this personally when I was around 48. And I had already begun having some cognitive decline. So this was about, 30 years ago.
Right.
And I said, gee, I'm glad I learned this now, because I already see now the cognitive improvement.
Right. This is important. Oof. Yeah, I wasn't stupid. I was just not sleeping well. Yes.
Well, do you realize, if you want to think about just total foresight, futuristic planning, imagine that they figured out all the kids in grade school that have sleep apnea, and they treated them.
Right.
Their grade, this was already done, by the way, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Somebody already did this experiment and proved it. But if you did that now, you would be increasing the IQ of those elementary age students by getting them treatment of their sleep disordered breathing. And you can imagine what that would do to society if it means helping all of those kids
learn
how to read,
yeah,
and learn how to read better and faster,
yeah,
because their brain now works.
Yeah, and retain the information and that the changes right. are so profound, because that 1 degree change way back far away is, instead of in Greenland, you end up in South America, flying from Europe. 1 degree change on course correction.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yes. Well, this is just so important. Like, it's one of those cornerstone issues of our existence that are so underappreciated.
Right. And it's, of course, the fact is you can't know what you're doing while you sleep. Therefore, you ignore it.
Right.
You don't wake up in the morning and go, gee, I wonder how I slept last night. Some people do, but the majority of us just say, hey, there's a cup of coffee right there. I can drink that. And now I can forget about how I slept last night.
Right.
And I can get about my business and go on with my day. I'm not saying that's not a reasonable solution. In fact, coffee is probably the greatest medicine that's ever been invented, and has probably saved more lives and helped more people out of difficult situations, even depression, just by giving them that energy boost. Right. However, if you take a step back and you go, well, why are you drinking caffeine? What is the need for caffeine stem from?
Right.
And the answer many times, more often than not, is there something wrong with your sleep? So you could actually work on your sleep if you want,
right.
or you could keep drinking coffee.
Well, all right. Ecologically speaking, I think we should work on the sleep.
I think it's a good idea to work on.
So you have a website where you teach people a lot, even for free, and then the book teaches them the rest. And the ones who are really struggling, they can book an appointment with you.
Exactly. So it's BarryCracoMD.com.
Yeah.
It has several videos that are free on there. It also has various books. It's got some specialized books for people who have problems with chronic nightmares. It has books on people with insomnia, has my latest book, Life Saving Sleep. It'll have my new book, Fast Asleep, in a few weeks. It has the access registration form for the Sleep Health Coaching Service. I also have a free Substack newsletter called fastasleep.substack.com. I'm likely to be starting a podcast on sleep sometime next month. And it might be in tandem with the release of the Fast Asleep book, helping people to overcome insomnia.
Right on. Important stuff. Well, if you need more guests, I'd be happy to talk to them about metabolic typing and how The oxidizer needs to eat this, and the autonomic needs to eat that in order to not be stuck in the autonomic hell of too sympathetic, the fight flight.
Very good, very good.
Yeah,
pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's just spectacular is what you're doing, and
thank you.
Thank you for the years that you spend diving into it.
Well, it's helped my sleep too, so I got an added benefit.
That's great. All right. Well, we've said it once, but we'll say it again. Barry Krakow, MD. That's BarryKrakowMD.com. Go there, find the book, and get your partner who's snoring off of that, because not only is it disturbing to you, it's shortening their lives. So fix it. Dr. Krakow, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Great talking with you.
Yeah, this is Martin Patella for Life Enthusiast Health Shots Podcast, life-enthusiast.com. Thank you. My body's a temple, but the walls are cracked. Stuck in the rubble of the years I stacked. Stagnation in my veins like a river turned to dust. Toxic whispers in the wind, but I gotta rebuild. I must rebuild.